Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Roundtable. Great to be with you once again. Julian Marcus, Matt McQuaid. You know the score by now. We've done quite a few of these already this season, our 6th week of doing the Roundtable since we've come back. And as always, plenty to talk about, especially in a couple of different markets. If you're a fan of the Wildcats, if you're a fan of the Phoenix, if you're a fan of the Bullets, stay tuned. We've got to chat. Matt McQuaid, plenty to talk about as always, and I feel like this week the knives are sharpening in certain quarters.
Yes, Julian. Hello, and hello to all of our loyal listeners. It's great to have you on board once again. Yeah, you mentioned those three markets, and I think the fans in those three markets, one in particular, need serious therapy and counselling right about now, because their teams are not performing to expectation. Well, maybe two of them. One of them, I think a lot of people would probably look at them and say, yeah, it's pretty obvious that was going to happen. But as far as the other two teams, which we'll get to, yeah, the fans are in a little bit of depression at the moment. But the flip side, and there's always a flip side in sport, there's always a winner and a loser. There's a market that is celebrating and should be extremely excited about the direction their team is headed. It's can't wait to talk about them and can't wait to talk about all the great stories that unfolded. What was a remarkable round three? It really was. It had everything. It had classic games. It had upsets. It had a shocking blowout. Just brought up again, you know, how great and how interesting this league continues to be.
We'll weave our way through the weekend's results as we go, but just to recap off the top for round three, the 36ers, 93-83 over the Phoenix. The Taipans, well, we're going to be talking about them quite a bit, I feel. 90-78 over the Jackies. Melbourne United, 97-68 over the Wildcats in Perth, and that honestly flatters the Wildcats. 102-100, the 36ers going to Wollongong and taking away the W. Very impressive display. The Kings over the Bullets in the Brisbane return to Boondall, 91-82. The Taipans coming to Melbourne and smacking around Melbourne United, 101-88 at John Cain Arena. And then the Jack Jumpers in OT pulling off a miraculous comeback. But is there anything miraculous about the Jack Jumpers anymore? It's just what they do, 84-79 over the Perth Wildcats. We're going to be talking about teams on the hot seat on the other side of the break. So I want to start off with the positive, and the positive has to be the Cairns Taipans. What a spectacular weekend for them. What a wonderful start to the season for the Snakes. 3-1 through the first four games, but this weekend they overcome the plucky Jack Jumpers, as they so often are at home, and then what they did on Sunday to go down to John Cain Arena and to beat Melbourne United. And they're a team that they've actually had some success against in recent years, the Taipans. They don't fear Melbourne United, and they don't fear John Cain Arena, and they showed it again. 101-88, and the longer the game went, the better they were.
Yeah, look, Julian, I mentioned it up top. I felt like there's one team that the supporters should be extremely excited, and this is the team, obviously, the Cairns Taipans. What a weekend to knock over, you know, the two grand finalists, the defending champions at home first, and then going into John Cain Arena against a Melbourne team that was coming off an absolute massacre of a fellow championship contender, albeit, yes, it was in Perth, and you could argue the travel and all of that, but the Taipans had to do some serious travelling as well, as they always do. But to do that on the second of a back-to-back and do it without one of your imports, Tanner Groves, unbelievable performance. It really was. And you know, even though Melbourne jumped them early, I never had the sense that Melbourne had any kind of control over that game. I always felt like the Taipans were, you know, going to at least make a serious run at them, which they did. And not only did they do that, they took it to them down the stretch and really won going away in the end, as it turned out. You know, and it's held Melbourne to 34 points in the second half. And scored 35 in the second quarter themselves. So that was a win. Wasn't a wire-to-wire win, but once they got control of that game, they never let go. And the one thing we've talked about with this team, can they win on the road? And they've proven it straight away. Yes, they can. I think it's going to give them enormous confidence. I think the one thing, Adam Ford, and I'll get to him in a moment, I think the one thing, the challenge is going to be keeping them on a level as far as mentally, psychologically is concerned. He's always what been concerned about, you know, the highs too high, the lows are too low, but particularly the highs that they haven't really done anything yet. All they've done is won three straight games in extremely impressive fashion. But the reality is they're way from the finished product. There's a lot of work they still have to do. But my goodness, are they impressive. And are they fun to watch as well? They're a typical forward team, but with just a little bit of style, a little bit of swagger. They play hard. They play, you know, they play together. They're very, very connected. The chemistry is awesome. They've got an X factor of an import who could be an MVP candidate. In fact, I think he already is in Rob Edwards. And then they've got a kid running the point who is growing up in front of our eyes into potentially one of the most exciting prospects this country has seen in a while. Now, I know that's a big statement considering, you know, you've got your Josh Giddeys and what have you, but this kid, Taron Armstrong, is special. Yeah, and I know it's kind of an overused word these days, but I don't know what else to call him other than he's a really gifted player, one of the most gifted point guards I think I've ever seen, who is going to tear this league a new one if he continues on this current trajectory. So much good to talk about when it comes to Cairns. And I mean, look, the absolute screaming hot favourite for Coach of the Year is Adam Ford. And this guy is an absolute genius. I mean, look, his coaching style is not for everybody, and that's been spoken about often. You have to be willing to accept hearing some hard truths that maybe your ego doesn't want to hear as a pro athlete, but with the understanding that when he's hard on you, it's only with your best interests at heart and with the team's best interests at heart. And wanting you to, you know, understand that, you know, this is where I want you to go. And if you go to this place, then you're going to be better as a player and as a human being for that matter. And the team is going to be so much the better. So yeah, I'm a massive fan of his. I always have been. What a start to the season. Yes, it is early. You don't want to get caught up too much in the hype. And I know that's going to be his big focus, but how can you not be anything other than just massively impressed with this ball club right now?
Still have to laugh at the fact that, again, betting odds, and I know I keep going back to that, but it's just one indicator for the mood out there. But I've said it a few times, whoever does the odds for some of the betting companies for the NBL must be watching a different sport that I am, because the Taipans right now are $61 to win the championship.
Yeah, that is insane.
Now,
get on it.
What on earth is,
yeah,
like, bet responsibly, of course,
yeah,
always.
Of course.
But
Yeah.
my goodness, what on earth are they doing? I don't know how much longer you're going to be able to sleep on the Taipans, especially when you mention Taron Armstrong through his first four games, averaging 17 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and he's just getting started.
And it's not just the stats. The thing that I'm just so excited about this kid, because I love these kids that have got the it's a swagger. It's not an arrogance. It's a confidence. And it's, I belong here. And not only do I belong here, I'm going to take this game over, which he did against Tasmania at home. And then he was huge against United yet again. And, you know, that sort of performance for someone so young, particularly playing that particular spot, the point guard position, is just so impressive. And you just love, there's so much to love about this kid. The size, he's a lot bigger than you think he is. I mean, he's 6'4", close to 6'5". He's long. He's got sneaky hops. He's athletic. He can shoot the three. It's not the biggest part of his game yet, and it's still improving, but he's shown already that he can knock that thing down from the outside. But the thing, the two things for me, the IQ, which is completely off the charts, and the vision. He has shown us his repertoire already, or a significant part of it at least, because you've got a guy, there's the hook pass, there's the no look, There's the behind the back. There's the between the legs. There's, you know, the, from the strong side to the weak side, you know, sort of cross court, beautiful looks, handoffs, pocket passes, you name it. This kid does it all. And it's interesting because I'm sort of watching that game against United, and he would have had easy another three or four assists. His team, I mean, he ended up, what was it? He had four assists. He probably should have doubled that because he was hitting guys. They weren't prepared for it, but they were great passes. They were absolutely on the money. You know, that it's just, he's so creative that I think sometimes that his teammates don't understand that, you know, this guy, if he's open, he's going to get you the ball, you know, and I love players like that. So, I mean, it's an amazing story with him. I mean, he had those two years at California Baptist University. It's a mid-major university in the WAC, NCAA. He was in the transfer portal before he came to the NBL. So it was a bit of a coup to get him because some of the colleges were potentially interested in him. One of them was, you know, Gonzaga, which is, you know, one of the powerhouses. And you just imagine him running a college program, you know, and the hype around him if he was doing that. So we're extremely lucky to have him. But, yeah, as Andrew Gay said on the broadcast on Sunday, you know, he's a future boomer. Yeah, you better believe it. He is. Particularly if he continues along this trajectory, he continues to progress, he just looks sensational. And, again, he's making everybody around him better. And that is the absolute gold standard of point guards. If you can do that, if you can make people around you better, which he's doing, then, you know, that's just an outstanding prospect and another great Australian prospect, which I get, you can tell I'm jacked up about this kid. I really am. I watched both games. I watched every game this weekend. Actually, it was a real festival of hoops, but just was in awe of him. You know, I really was. And look, he's far from the finished product. There's no two ways about that. And I'm not saying, you know, he's going to be an MVP. I mean, he could very well be, but he's two or three years away. But what we've seen so far, it's just been incredible. And, you know, now we know why 40 gave him the keys. It's pretty obvious.
I think now I'm prepared anyway to look at that first game loss to Illawarra as an aberration. That's the first thing. The second thing is you mentioned this is an Adam Ford team, but this is a different Adam Ford team. He has the blue-collar blueprint that we always see with his size, but as you mentioned, you're adding the swagger and the arrogance and the confidence to be able to move the ball around and do some special things. You combine that with the blue-collar work ethic, this team can go anywhere. That is a fearsome and exciting combination. And then you look at what's ahead for them this weekend. Well, if you're not already thinking they're legit, here's the perfect opportunity for Cairns to prove they are legit. Thursday night, Perth Wildcats at home. Sunday afternoon, Sydney Kings away.
Yeah.
Set perfectly for them.
It really has. And, I mean, if they beat Perth, even if they get a split, quite frankly, I think, you know, you'd be happy with that because it is a brutal schedule again. They get, you know, Sydney, Perth. I mean, look what they've got. They've had Tasmania, Melbourne, Perth, Sydney, four straight games. They're 2-0 in that stretch right now. If they finish that stretch 3-1, I think 40 would be well pleased. Obviously wants to win both, clearly. But if they were able to get at least one and they'd have to start favourites against Perth, you know, at the moment. They really would, particularly at home, particularly how they always play there. And then against the Kings, who, while have been impressive for the most part, yeah, granted they lost to Illawarra, but that would have been a blowout loss last year. It wasn't this time. They had their chances in that. And they get a Sydney team who will have played Adelaide. So that, you know, that's bit of an advantage for them as well, potentially. But if they get that game, wow. You know, that $61 will become $20 or $15 in a hurry in the betting markets because that will be one of the great starts, you know, in you know, one of the great four-game stretches, actually, when you look at it. Maybe that one of them in franchise history, you know, considering – you know, who they are and how they're regarded by everybody else outside of Cairns, pretty much. Not me though. I've got, I've had the massive regard for them for many, many years. And they've always punched above their weight, similar to what, the old Illawarra Hawks used to. So, yeah, great weekend ahead, and we'll get into that later. But yeah, it's exciting, and they could have, and I talked about MVP again. It's, I mean, they, and we'll get to that as well. But they could have one of them on their roster as well, in Rob Edwards. I mean, every time I see him play, man, he's just got that look about him that says no one in this league is going to stop me. So, and then Pedro Bradshaw, while I think he's going to be serviceable, he's not going to be a guy that's going to give you 15 to 20 a game, and I don't think that's his role. But he's going to play great D. He's going to, fill in the gaps a little bit offensively. Sam Waterberg's off to a great start, and when they get Tanner Groves more incorporated in that unit, they're a really, really tough looking squad, and brilliantly coached by Adam Ford.
I just love what the possibilities for the Cairns Taipans could be, and especially coming in off the back of what the Jack Jumpers have done the last three seasons for what you consider a smaller market. And when I say smaller market, obviously Sydney, Melbourne, Perth are the conglomerates, and everybody else falls into line with that. And they like Illawarra and Tasmania, although Tasmania represents a state, the island, of course. Cairns, you consider as one of the regional teams along with Illawarra. But I just look ahead and I think, well, if the Cairns Taipans can have a spectacular season, and they don't even necessarily need to win a championship, even though it would be amazing to see them finally get one. But even if they just have a big season, get into the playoffs, have a deep run, make a semi-final series, there's another feel-good story. There's another wonderful tale that the NBL could tell this season. I know I'm running a long way ahead, but I mean, these are the sorts of conversations you can start to have a little bit now with Cairns and the fan base as well for the Taipans. I mean,
It's a great fan base.
they're a wonderful fan base. They're a loyal fan base. They know that they're going to be going into the fight with one arm tied behind their back. It's just how they are set up. It's just the reality of the situation. But especially Adam Ford's the perfect coach for that side. Adam Ford would be a perfect coach for Illawarra as well. He represents that blue collar, roll up your sleeves. Okay, we're giving a lot of weight up in this bout, but you know what? I'm going to start swinging anyway. And that's what the Taipans have always been. I'm absolutely in their corner. I'm an unabashed Cairns Taipans fan, and this team is fun to watch. And I said a couple of weeks ago the Breakers had the number one seed when it comes to the uniforms, but I shouldn't be showing that disrespect for the snakeskin.
No, I was
The
going to say.
snakeskin was always numero uno.
Yeah, it has to be, doesn't it? Yeah, I love it. It's brilliant ever since they introduced it.
And I love the fact that we can start this week's program speaking about the Taipans for nearly 20 minutes. How good's
Yeah,
that?
that's right. How good is that? I'm sure 40 will be impressed.
So watch the Taipans with great interest. I can't wait to see them come back to Melbourne in a couple of weeks for that rematch with United on the 27th, I believe. It is, if my maths are correct. Yeah, the 27th of October. Give it a few more weeks. What a game that's going to be against Melbourne United later in the month. But this weekend, Perth at home, Sydney on the road. They split that 1-1. They're legit. If they're 2-0, get scared for the
Yeah, the
rest of the
lid's off.
NBL.
The lid's off if they're 2-0.
Big
Yeah.
time. On the other side of the break, though, the mood's going to get a bit less jovial. There's a few teams with
Oh,
some issues, and we're going to break them down on the other side of this. So, as I said at the start, if you're a fan of the Cats, the Wildcats, of course, or if you're a fan of Geelong, you might want to stick around too. If you're a fan of the Bullets, if you're a fan of the Phoenix, stick around. Let's chat. Welcome back to the roundtable. Let's get down to some brass tacks. So where do we start? Perth, Southeast Melbourne, Brisbane. Spin the wheel, make the deal, Matt McQuaid. Which team do you want to dissect first? Let's get the operating table back out. Let's get out the scalpel. Which one are we ripping into first?
Yeah, I think it has to be Perth, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because particularly after what we saw at RAC Arena, So it was history, actually. The worst ever loss by the home team in that building in their history, ever since they moved there from Challenge Stadium all those years ago, which is an amazing thing to think of. But, you know, you consider what a fortress that place was, particularly in the Rob Beveridge, Trevor Gleeson years, and particularly Trevor, that it was just, you know, and having been there and experienced it, you know, I know what I'm talking about. That place was without a doubt the toughest place to win a basketball game in the National Basketball League, hands down, not even close. You know, you can have your, I love the Orange Army to death, and we've already spoken about them, but there was nothing like that RAC Arena, Perth Arena, as it used to be called, and an opposition team going in there. There was a level of an intimidation that just couldn't be replicated. It wasn't just the team on the court, and they were pretty intimidating themselves, led by the, you know, the likes of Damian Martin, you know, as I've said many times, the greatest defensive player in NBL history, the Kevin Lishes, the Matt Knights, the Jesse Wagstaff in his prime. You just go on and on and on. You know, Jermaine Beal when he was there, you know, James Ennis and all the greats, you know, that and obviously Bryce later on down the track, Bryce Cotton. But what I watched that game and I think my jaw dropped about three or four times. I could not believe what I saw. A Melbourne team missing Matthew Dellavedova, granted Perth missing Ty Webster and Dylan Windler. I'll get that name right one of these days. And they were big outs for them. But that's no excuse. I'm sorry. I you just can't use it as an excuse. What I saw was a team that was soft, and I cannot believe I'm describing the Perth Wildcats in this fashion, but I can only go on what I saw. They were soft. They weren't committed. They psychologically were blasted by a Melbourne team that got in their heads early. And there was one matchup in particular that I'll point to, and that's Shaley and what he did to Bryce Cotton. I have never, ever seen Bryce Cotton so passive in my life, ever. I only had the 5 points, took 10 shots. And I know some members of the Red Army are going to blame John Rilley because why aren't we devising an offense around Bryce? You know, I don't agree with that. I think, look, he is great, but he's also another year older and he is showing signs of slowing down. Not that I don't still respect him as one of the greatest we've ever seen in this country. Of course I do. But facts are facts. You know, our great friend Boddy Nodge has a saying. We always like to remember players as they were, not as they are. And right now, Bryce Cotton is not the Bryce Cotton of previous years. And he was terrible against Melbourne. You've got to say it. You know, yes, teams get physical with him. Well, that's how it is. That's how it's always been. He gets his fair share of calls. Now, let's be honest about that as well, Perth fans. And yeah, you know, obviously from John's perspective, head coach John Rilley, he's got to put him in the right position to succeed. And I don't disagree with that. But I also don't think you can pin it all on really as most of the Red Army are at the moment. I think it's a team that, look, they did show better signs, and we'll get into it against Tasmania, a game they should have won. And I like the fight and I like the energy. And clearly a few home truths were told after that Melbourne game. But that was an absolute disaster in front of a massive crowd, 12,000. And they didn't even give a yelp. They allowed they got punked in their own building. Let's just call it what it is. They got punked. They got manhandled by Melbourne. They were completely uninspired. They just lacked across the board. And Shea Ely basically ate Bryce Cotton's lunch. And you don't say that very often about anyone doing that to Bryce Cotton, but that's what happens. So I'm glad they recovered. But again, they still lost against Tasmania, but did, as John really pointed out, show good. It was actually great character and good fight to come back after that shellacking at home. But they've got problems. There's no two ways about that. Hopefully they get Ty Webster and Windler back for this week's games, particularly against you know, the Taipans. They're going to need those guys to step up and really produce, and we've seen what Winler's capable of. And you know, so getting him back for that game, it's their only game, which is going to help this weekend. So yeah, they need those guys to step up. But yeah, look, I mean, there's certainly issues, but there's positives as well. I mean, Elijah Pepper looks like he's going to be a player. Benny Henschel, I think, is going to be a player. I think they've got an issue inside. I think there's maybe a little too much over-reliance on Keanu Pinder, and you know, he's very, very up and down, and has been throughout his career. When he's good, he's outstanding. When he's bad, sometimes he can be invisible and he can be pushed around, and he was against Melbourne. So yeah, look, I mean, they're a real watch for me now. They've got to figure out a way to go into the snake pit and get a W, because they've lost three straight. They look terrible against Melbourne. Sydney, you know, really took it to them early, and you know, I mean, it was more the Kings taking their foot off the accelerator, which we'll talk about later on, than anything else that Perth did, apart from Pepper hitting those six threes, of course. But again, they didn't look good in that game. They didn't look good in Melbourne. Defensively, much better against Tasmania, but there were a lot of open looks that Tasmania missed. And that's the other side of the coin. So, but again, I do appreciate the fight and the character that they showed in that ball game, one they could have easily won. But they have got to, if they lay another egg against the Taipans like they did against United, the alarm bells will be ringing seriously loud, no doubt.
We're talking about one of the greats of the modern era in Bryce Cotton. There's no question about that.
Yep.
He'd be him and Ricky Grace in the conversation for, and Andrew Vlahov for greatest Wildcat of all time.
Oh, you got to throw Damien Martin in there.
Damien Martin, of course.
Damien Martin is, yeah, for sure. But oh, look, as far as guards go, yeah, it's pretty much Cotton, Ricky. They're the, you know, and Damo. Damo for different reasons, but yeah, it's always been kind of that comparison between Bryce and Ricky. Absolutely.
But this was what I flagged at the start of the season. And we see it with everybody that Father Time is undefeated. And this isn't the same Bryce Cotton that we saw even 4 years ago. Because again, and I look at, and I know his MVP accolades tell a different story, but at some point, the wear and the tear of a long basketball career is going to catch up with you. And he has had to be the guy for Perth for such a long time, such a long time. And I remember 3 years ago, the injury that he suffered during the playoff run, and ultimately they got swept by Melbourne United, how catastrophic that injury was. And that just lingers in the back of my mind. And I think, okay, well, if you're looking at Bryce Cotton to be the explosive live wire that he's always been, I think what you're looking at here is the art of diminishing returns. Now, Bryce Cotton is one of the legendary players in this competition, and he always will be, and he still is one of the best players in the competition. But is it time to look at Bryce Cotton and try to use him in a different way, to try and utilize his skill set in a different manner? Because I think if we're looking to try and see Bryce Cotton, the solo match winner that he has been for so long, I don't know if that's going to be enough for Perth anymore. I don't know if he can do that anymore, and I don't know if that's fair on him to ask him to do that at this point in his career. Is it time to look at utilizing him differently?
I don't know about utilizing him differently, and again, look, you never write off the champions, right? And I'm not doing that as such. I'm saying that for right now. And he's been through these patches before of late. You know, he was last season, you remember, he had those struggles earlier in the season like he's having now. And he's struggling to adjust to the fact that teams are blitzing the living hell out of him and trying to get the ball out of his hands. And he's not dealing with it very well. And against Melbourne United, he was up against a guy, one of the very rare guys in this league, in Shea Illy, who doesn't need help to slow him down because he's just that good of a defender. Now, the old Bryce Cotton might have found a way around that. My whole thing with him is he can still be that match winner for them. it's just not going to be as often as maybe we've seen in the past. You know, he's not going to be a totally dominant figure, I don't believe. I think he's going to be exceptional, and his exceptional is, you know, or very good even. His very good is probably still better than 85% of the rest of the league. He's just that good. We know this. And I'm, as I said, I'm hesitant to write him off because it is still very, very early in the piece. But you can see what teams are doing to him. You know, and, you know, you saw that, you know, Tasmania. Yeah, you know, it was an instant double team where we got the ball over the halfway line. I mean, it's just, it was. Because they recognize the threat that he represents. So I've said this before. I said it in the preview, the season preview, that what I wanted to see was Bryce given more rest, you know, in the regular season. And in order to do that, though, you do need a full roster. And, you know, in all fairness to John Riley, he hasn't had that. You know, he certainly didn't have that last round. So, you know, let's see if Ty Webster comes back, again, allows Bryce to play a little more off the ball, maybe, you know, find ways they can set those down screens, he can run those curls that he does so well, you know, with that constant motion of his, and they can figure out ways to get him better looks than they are right now, because he's having to do too much to try and create for himself. And you can see shots off. His perimeter shot is off at the moment, and that can be put down to, you know, physical things, or, you know, fatigue, or he, you know, is just maybe lacking a little. You never say lack confidence, but yeah, look, they all go through it. Even the greats go through these slumps, and he's had his slumps in the past. But again, you know, you do add the fact that he is another year older. Teams scout for him, but that's fine. You know, there's this Perth roster, which I did wax lyrical about in the preseason, and I still believe in, by the way. You know, there's guys that have got to take more responsibility upon themselves. I think, you know, certainly Christian Doolittle did that against Tasmania. I thought he was outstanding, and I love his game. But it's going to be the kids again. It's going to be the Peppers and the Henschels that, you know, and then up front, they're going to need more out of, even though he's still very young, you know, Ethan Almansa, and they need, you know, Pinder to be more consistent. And, you know, look, and Windler's going to be big as well. You know, I think they'll look better with Windler in there because he's another guy that can stretch the floor, take a little bit of pressure off Bryce. So, again, short summary, I'm not prepared to write him off just yet. He's still a champion. He's still one of the all-time greats. But, things need to change, I think, to get him unlocked a little bit more.
I think you're a fool if you're going to write him off. It is Bryce Cotton after all, but yeah, I look at the, and I've seen a few people write him off, and I just think, guys, do you learn from history? And I'm looking at how many minutes Bryce Cotton played on Sunday as well. He played 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Now it's early in the season. You don't want to cook him for when the big games come. That was my concern going into the season, because we saw it last year. He struggled until around 6-7, and then he went off. But if you keep doing that year on year, you roll the dice. Eventually, one year, it's going to blow up in your face. Yeah.
And played 37 minutes a game, and that's what I've talked about as well, the need to get him more rest.
Yeah.
Now, you know, again, it's tough to do, and it's, again, and I agree with what Johnny said as well in the press conference in Tasmania. It's not just about his scoring. It is about his playmaking and, you know, his ability to he's not a great man defender, but he is a guy, you know, you're not going to put him up in the same ballpark as a Darnell Mee or a Damian Martin, but he's, you know, he's more than serviceable. But that, again, that can take his legs away. This is my whole point. You know, they've just got to figure out, you know, creative ways to get the guy rest when he needs it, so that by the time the playoffs do roll around, and I'm still convinced they're going to make the playoffs. I mean, this is just a temporary blip, in my opinion. They're going to be better, but by the time the playoffs roll around, we get the Bryce Cotton, at least the Bryce Cotton that we've been treated to for all these years, that MVP level, that just absolute assassin on the floor that he is.
When I look at the box score at the end of a game, I don't want to be seeing Bryce Cotton playing 33 minutes or more every night. I don't want to see him playing 40 minutes in a game. You want to, unless you're playing one of the very top teams, you need to get him that rest through the season. And unfortunately, where they are at the moment, I think they're going to need him on the floor because, like you said, if they go out against Cairns and they get beaten and get beaten well on the road, which the way that the Taipans are going could very well happen, well, the Red Army is going to be screaming. If they aren't already, they're going to be screaming.
What do you mean? They will be screaming. They are screaming.
At ear-splitting noise.
Yeah, that's right.
So while Perth continue to deal with the fallout of that, we head to Victoria and to the Hoops capital. Yeah. Well, the Hoops capital is Sydney. That's well trademarked. The heartland of Hoops. The heartland of Hoops. And
that's right.
At the moment, the heartland is heartbroken because the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix are 0-4. I'm going to ask you this question. What positives can you describe about the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix right now?
Well, Matt Hurt can score the ball.
Yeah.
I'll give him that. And Derek Walton Jr. can still be a dominant playmaker in this league, even though he's not shooting the ball that great at the moment. And that's probably – and Jordan Hunter's shown some good signs, I guess. That's another one. But other than that, yeah, this is a club in serious trouble. And, you know, they were a club that I actually – I don't think I had them in my four. I think I had them in the six. So I had them making the play-in tournament. And right now – at 0-4, I don't see how they can even make the play-in tournament if something doesn't, you know, talk about change. There has to be dramatic changes, and I don't even know if they can do it this season. And that's a big statement considering it's still very, very early, but no team in the 40-minute era, the current 40-minute era of the NBL has started 0-4 and made the playoffs. So they're up against significant history, which of course can be made. Don't get me wrong. And, you know, I went to bat for this team in the preseason. I looked at them. I thought I liked what they did. I liked how they recruited for the most part. I thought, you know, they brought in three championship winners. Surely that's got to rub off the rest of the group, even though it is a very new group, really. They've rebuilt that team. But, they've been a disaster. You know, and look, that's a tough word to use, but it's the truth.
It's accurate.
And I just think the reason I say that is because my expectations for them were perhaps higher than other people's. I don't know. But I looked at that group and I thought they've recruited. I think Tommy Greer and Simon Mitchell have done a terrific job putting this team together. I really liked who they brought in. It just seemed to it answered some needs. Now, you can question, you know, one of the imports who I think is going to be on the hot seat is Joe Wieskamp. I don't think he's played very well at all. Matt Hurt is a terrific offensive player, but doesn't play a lick of D, I'm afraid to say. You know, and they're bottom three in offensive and defensive efficiency right now. The defensive efficiency is probably the more worrying because, you know, they can't stop anybody from scoring at the moment. And they've got some good defenders on their team, but as a group collectively, it's just too easy to score on the Phoenix right now. And of course, that kind of brings me to Mike Kelly as a head coach. Mike, who I respect enormously, I think he's one of my favorite people in the league. He is one of the singularly nicest people, you know, that I know in the NBL. Just a quality human being. But as our good friend, again, Boddy Nodge, pointed out last week, where do nice guys typically finish? And that's last. And Boddy even said in his most recent column, he's sort of, and I kind of look at it, and it's hard to disagree, that maybe Mike would be better suited to a college team in the US because for whatever reason, the message is not getting through to his players. And they look at times completely bereft and look, unfortunately, you know, with the talent on this roster, you know, the criticisms I have of Nathan Sobey's performance notwithstanding, there should be enough talent on this roster not to start 0-4. As simple as that. And look, against Adelaide, you know, they never looked like it. You know, they never looked likely. Adelaide just dominated.
The game was over at halftime.
It was, and the final score, quite frankly, flattered.
Passively.
You know, I thought it flattered the Phoenix. And look, at the end of the day, I had to bring this up, but Mike Kelly's coaching record is not good reading, because at Southeast, he now, at the Phoenix, he's 10 and 22. For his career, he's 41 and 86. 41 and 86. So that's not good enough. I mean, it's a 32% winning rate, 32.3% winning rate, 41 and 86. And he had that one year, that one great year in Cairns, he was coach of the year. Everything else, he's just not gotten the job done. And again, it hurts me to say that, because I again, I'm not being critical of Mike as a person. No one can be critical of him as a person. He's just a great guy. I'm just not sure he's cut out for this. And, look, I can say this, that I've been told that that he's probably got a month to turn this around, or he's probably going to be done. So that's, our friend of the program, Olga Nulich, didn't say that in those terms in his latest column for ESPN, but he did kind of, imply it. And I can, I'm, you know, I won't say what the ultimatum is, but, I think you can read between the lines what he has to do in the next four games, let's say. So let's say the next 3 weeks. And if he doesn't do it, then, he'll be terminated, and or in all likelihood. So that's that, that's enormous pressure for a guy. There's no doubt, to turn it around. And can he do that? What can he do to turn it around would be my question. And I don't know, do you tweak the lineup? Do you, take what would be an enormous risk and sit Nathan Sobey, which a lot of people are calling for?
Well, like I said last week, they've got a Nathan Sobey problem with the Phoenix.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no doubt about that, and that's to me, I again, that's why I'm kind of a bit shocked about where the Phoenix are, because even though, I've had my criticisms of Nathan over the years, and I continue to, but I still have time for other parts of his game. And I always thought with him, it was just about finding the right situation. And I honestly believed this would be the right situation against, alongside a terrific playmaker in Derek Walton Jr. Hasn't worked so far. Not to say it can't turn around, but it hasn't worked so far. So is that a move you make? Do you look at perhaps, see, I one thing I do, I don't think Joe Wieskamp is right for that team. I think he's with Matt Hurt and his ability to stretch the floor, and I think Wieskamp's a bit surplus to requirements, in all honesty, particularly if he's not going to play D, right? So
Well, the signs were honestly there. That preseason classic they played against United, he had an off night that night, and I thought, not sure this guy's going to work out. And that's unfortunately continued into the season. I'd probably give him a couple more games to show it. And if not,
Hasn't
you've
been
got to make that
impressive.
call.
Yeah. Oh, look, I agree. I for me, that's I think those are the two things. If you're going to make big changes, I think one of them's got to be an import change, without a doubt. I think you could probably do better than Wieskamp, and no disrespect to him. Sometimes it doesn't work for whatever reason. The big problem with him is he doesn't play D. Neither does Matt Hurt, but at least Matt Hurt's a guy that's going to give you 20 a game. So, maybe that's that's obviously going to balance things out to a certain extent. At least he's going to give you productivity. Wieskamp, if he's not going to give you that kind of productivity and still not play any semblance of D, then what's he doing there? It would be my question. That would be one thing. And then the other thing is sit down with Nathan, if you can, and say to him, mate, we think you would be an outstanding six man. Guess what? We think we can make you the six man of the year. You could be the microwave off the bench. You could be that guy that comes in, that provides an immediate spark, that brings that tremendous energy, that lifts us when we need it, that dives on the floor for loose balls, that attacks, plays with freedom, all of that, and kind of, convince him, because I think that's probably where he should be. Hey, look, if it's good enough for Cameron Oliver at Sydney, it should be good enough for Nathan Sobey at Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, is what I would say. That's one thing I would do, and I'd plug Angus Glover in, because I think Angus is being lost in the shuffle again, and I don't it, it's he's not playing well, and I it, considering what he did in the preseason, I thought, oh my God, Angus is back, here we go. And then we're sort of back to where we were at Sydney, where he wasn't getting, you know, wasn't getting the looks. And I think maybe alongside Derek Walton, where he, you know, he'd be very comfortable, maybe they unlock him with that. So
yeah, big time.
Yeah. Yeah. I look, that's what I would say with the Phoenix. I think at 0-4, you just have to take stock. You've got, there's a few days till the next game. Then you've got the FIBA break coming up. I just think that if Mike, you know, look, brutally honest, I think it's going around the league from what I hear. And, you know, the league's a small league. People talk. So I tend to think that he's probably got a month. And in that month, I think he's got to try and do whatever he can, make changes with the rotations. If they're drastic, they're drastic. That's, you know, maybe even sit Wieskamp down, bring him off the bench. I mean, you've got to try something because it ain't working so far.
The position of Angus Glover honestly frustrates me as a neutral observer of the league. The lack of court time for Ben Eyre I find staggering.
Yeah, that was a weird one too. Yeah,
completely staggering. But a look at what the Phoenix have ahead in the next few weeks. They've got a contest on Saturday night against the Brisbane Bullets. Whoever loses that is in crisis. Then the following week, round 5, they've got a throwdown, a road throwdown for however you want to describe that, for whatever that is worth. You just go to the other dressing room. I don't know if it's a much of a muchness.
Different colours in the stadium. Yeah, goes from green to blue.
Yeah, so they're playing Melbourne United and the arena's going to be blue this time instead of green. And then the following week, they've got Illawarra when the arena will be green at John Cain Arena. It's a home game for them. But before that, they have another trip to New Zealand to face the Breakers. And then round 7, Tassie away, Perth at home. So that's what's ahead. At the moment, where's the win?
Brisbane would be the obvious one. And that's
it.
Look, you never know. That could be a get-right game for them. You don't. Sometimes they can. Then you've got New Zealand. So, look, that Brisbane game, that's a home game. That could be a get-right game for them. You know, I mean, it can happen. And then the throwdown, look, they haven't had the success against Melbourne in the throwdowns. We know that. And maybe they're due for that. So, Melbourne go in serious favourites, obviously, but in round 5. But, yeah, I mean, I think that Brisbane game coming up, and we'll get to the preview later on, but, yeah, that's, I mean, if both teams aren't in crisis already, then for sure the loser of that game will definitely be in crisis.
That game against New Zealand, that's in Christchurch as well, so it's not Spark Arena. So they're taking it around the regions again. Maybe an opening for the Phoenix maybe to jump them. But, yeah, the Phoenix, they've got some serious problems. Saturday night's going to be a desperation derby if there ever was one. And we've left the best till last because their opponents that night are the Brisbane Bullets. I get more messages when Brisbane lose.
Yeah,
Brisbane Bullets lose a game of basketball than perhaps my birthday. But, look, it's early in the season. It's very early in the season.
With your fingernails, Julian. You're hanging on with your fingernails.
I don't want to be the guy to blow it up at the end of round 3 and then get made to look a fool when they rattle off 6 in a row. Because we see it so often in this competition. But I will say this. I know it's on the road against Southeast Melbourne. But if they lose that, particularly if they get beaten badly, there will be a fire sale on Brisbane Island come next week.
Yeah, of course.
I'm not liking what I'm seeing at all.
It's funny. It's you know, we go back to that game. It really is the fork in the road game for both teams, isn't it?
Yeah.
Potentially. Only in round 4. So that's quite amazing. Yeah. I mean, what can you say? They looked – Justin Schiller's already used this word this season, but, I mean, that was pathetic.
That was more applicable for this game than the night that he used it.
That was really poor.
Okay, you know what? I can't hold on anymore. For their return to Boondall, right? Boondall, the place of the glory days.
Yep.
They moved back to Boondall. Leroy Loggins out the front of the building.
And in the building. Ainsley was there as well.
He should have been on the court. It would have given more than what any of the other guys in blue put on. And you dish up that?
Yeah, it was rubbish. And
buy your tickets now.
You know, Justin Schuler sort of hanging on to the fact they scored the last 16 points of that game. as a positive. I suppose you've got to find your positives wherever you can find them. But for the re- that was just the Kings in complete switch off mode. You know, they just, you could see it. And we'll talk about the Kings in a minute because it is one of their like little shortcomings that they've got at the moment. But for more than three quarters of that game, that was a total and utter mismatch. Defensively, they had no answers. Their bigs could do nothing with the Kings' smaller group, but a group that is very mobile, very athletic, very strong physically. They pushed them around, and you know it's you sort of look at Tyrell Harrison. I mean, on the face of it, Tyrell Harrison, Rocco Zakarski had you know good nights, but they were you know empty stats. They really were. I mean, Casey Prather, that dunk when you know he launched in and we thought, my God, here we go, Casey's back. But then, yeah, I mean, yeah, he played all right. 17 points, hit 8 of 15 from the field. You know, 5 rebounds. But again, they just weren't consequential stats to mine. None of what the Bullets did was consequential, other than the fact they almost broke the record for the worst 3-point shooting against a Kings team ever. They were right there, actually. The records, 1 of 18, I think it was Melbourne that did that way, way back in the day. Might have done it a couple of times, if my memory serves. But Bullets ended today were 1 of 19 before they hit a couple of threes late when you know the game was well out of hand. But yeah, look, there, you know, you look at Deng Adel, who's reverted to type again. Like he was at Illawarra, where you know he came in and everybody thought he's going to be an outstanding recruit. Not even Brian Goorjian could get him going. You know, you're looking at James Bateman looks completely out of his depth in this league. Keandre Cook was disappointing. So, you know, look, two of the three imports didn't fire. Tyrell Harrison got pushed around early. So 10 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds, but 5 turnovers as well. Zakarski, you know, look, played 15 and a bit minutes, had 11 points, 5 boards, a couple of dunks, but again, wasn't that great. Josh Bannon coming back from injury, and he'll be better for the run. But I just look at this team, and I just see wooden spoon written all over them. I can't, unless, again, you talk about change, and what have they got to do? Well, I mean, they can do better than Bateman. He's, you know, I mean, look, 9 points, 9 rebounds again, but, and again, it was sort of empty stats against a team that just dominated them. And as some have said, the Kings look like they were in a training drill. I mean, that's damning. That is really damning. I'm off them completely. I love Mitch Norton to death, and he'll always give his all, but I mean, he's fighting a losing battle, quite frankly. And I don't think they've got much depth. Yeah, look, it's disappointing because, as you said, Boondall been there many times and was there, you know, back in the 90s when it was really, in the early 90s when it was really pumping. It was something to see. You know, where they get 11, 12,000 in it, what is a different configuration to what they had the other night, but they still got over 7,000 in that building. And, you know, that they would have gone home extremely disappointed with what they saw. I don't know. Maybe they would have been happy with the 16 straight points, but anybody with any basketball sense would have seen that team and gone, oh my God, they're not going anywhere this season.
I know that the push to the, and we spoke about this last week with Boddy Nodge quite a bit, that, you know, the NBL positions itself as an entertainment product primarily, and you're looking at the fans who come for an entertainment spectacle rather than a sporting spectacle. But I don't know how entertaining it is if the team that you're supporting that represents your city is down 91-66 with 4 minutes left in the game. I don't find that entertaining myself.
No.
But some people might be easily pleased.
And the other thing I was going to say, they scored 27 points to halftime. It's the lowest halftime score against any Sydney Kings team ever.
Yeah, pathetic.
That's just ridiculous.
Pathetic. Yeah.
So, you know, and I mean, you could argue, look, they scored 56 points in the second half. But to
Cold
what
star.
End?
Cold star.
I mean, it's, yeah, they're, as I mentioned, they're empty stats to me. You know, probably says more about the Kings dropping their bundle when they shouldn't and not being quite at the standard they need to be just yet, where, you know, the Kings should have absolutely eviscerated them and won by 50.
Will Brian Gorgian be on them about that?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, definitely. You know, he would hate that. There's no doubt about that. But, yeah, tough times in Brisbane.
Yeah. They've got the Phoenix, as I said, the desperation derby on Saturday, and the loser officially gets to be the first team in crisis in NBL 25. So a lot on the line Saturday night in Melbourne. So there are our three teams on the hot seat. We'll come back on the other side of this break, and we'll look at the rest of the round three action and a look ahead to this weekend, round four of NBL 25. It's the round table as we get set for round four of the NBL competition this weekend. It starts Thursday night, of course, with Cairns up against Perth. But the results that we have touched upon already, Adelaide over South East Melbourne, 93-83. Cairns over Tasmania, 90-78. The Wildcats getting blown out by United, 97-68. 102-100. This is an interesting result, and what a weekend for the 36ers. They come off the back of a loss to Cairns in round two. There's plenty of chatter around the Adelaide 36ers, particularly on social media, and not only do they get it done in really impressive circumstances, especially that win against the Hawks, who I think are serious title contenders. To go into Wollongong and to beat them there, not many teams are going to do that this campaign.
It was a great game too. I thought maybe the best game of the round. Obviously not great defensively, but in terms of, we talk about the entertainment value aspect of it, I would defy anybody to tell me that wasn't a highly entertaining ball game. Yeah, look, it was a real surprise. I thought that was one of the upsets of, maybe the upset of the round. Yeah, in terms of Perth getting destroyed by Melbourne, you could probably argue that, and obviously what Cairns did. But I think Adelaide going into a team that had been undefeated, that was coming off, you know, a great win over the Kings, and was, you know, was red hot, full house, which was fantastic to see at the Sandpit, the Wynn Entertainment Centre. But they took it to them, and you know, great to see, sort of from an off-court perspective, you know, Grant Kelly kind of making nice with Scott Ninnis, and everything seems to have been worked out in that regard, and which is great, because then you hope that moving forward, it's you know, Scott's great mate Brett Maher would be brought back to the fold as well, and let's hope that all happens, because yeah, you don't want, you know, any kind of splits with you, the greats of the past. And Scott's a great guy, and you know, very, I'm sure he was very gracious. And again, I'm sure part of it was the fact he was probably paid out a decent amount of his contract, as he should be. I'm sure that helps. But nonetheless, you know, it did come across as a very positive meeting between he and Grant Kelly, which is, that's only a good thing. Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? You sort of go from the hue and cry of the off season to what we're seeing now of late, and that weekend results. I mean, the Phoenix game, yeah, they dominated that game, and as we talked about, the 10-point margin kind of flattered Southeast Melbourne at the end of the day, but then going into an environment like that in front of 5,000 screaming Hawkheads and walking away with an improbable victory in the end. You know, they had to survive a you know, Tyler Harvey three missed at the end, but they were brilliant, led by the little dynamo Kendrick Davis, who's been, you know, an absolute sensation early. You know, 32 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, but just looked completely unstoppable. He really did. Montrezl Harrell, man amongst boys as per usual. Love his interaction with the crowd. Love his interaction with the other player. He seems like a genuinely good guy. And I love that little byplay when he suckered Sam Froehlich into a foul and just gave him a wink, and then they had a bit of a laugh. And yeah, you know, I love that stuff. I think that's great. And you know, Dejan Vasiljevic getting the job done again. He loves playing in that venue. I've seen it a million times. And yeah, look, I mean, as I said, defense was kind of an afterthought, but you know, it didn't matter. I just loved the way they played. You can make an argument. The thing about Adelaide is they'll go as far as their starting five takes them. It's a very impressive. If Harrell sticks around, you know, that's an impressive starting five. They probably only go 8 deep realistically at the moment. If they can figure out a way to keep Harrell and then bring in Jarrell Martin, who's potentially 2 or 3 weeks away, then that's going to make things very, very interesting for the rest of the league. But yeah, full credit to Mike Wells, you know, and the other big, big positive that came out of, and I don't know, I mean, he didn't really say as much in the post-game press conference after the Phoenix victory, but he getting Isaac Humphries unlocked in the offense, you know, getting Isaac Humphries more touches was huge, absolutely huge. And, you know, Ice was brilliant in Wollongong, 17 points, 7 of 8 from the field to go along with 8 rebounds. He was in a couple of block shots. He was terrific. He was terrific at home in Adelaide, you know, really from the start. You know, he was such a focal point early. It was just great to see. And in that game, finished with 22 points and 6 boards. Look, you know, if you get him going, and this team is formidable. You know, they are. Look, that very quietly, that Davis Vasiljevic backcourt, which not many people are talking about, that backcourt is potentially lethal, and we kind of saw it in both games this week. And if they can keep that kind of production going, the pair of them, because DJ is going to find it a little bit easier to get his shot off when you've got a weapon like Davis, who's that classic Jerome Randall type, a little bit bigger, but, you know, obviously score first point guard, but can still facilitate. Had 7 assists against the Phoenix, and, you know, it's going to make life a lot easier with him as that scorer that teams have to key on. And then, I mean, who do you not guard? You're going to cheat off Davis? No. You're going to cheat off DJ? No way. So where do you go as far as the opposition defenses are concerned? They look scary. I'm not a believer in them just yet. As far as, you know, do I think they're a championship level team? Not yet. Doesn't mean they can't evolve into one. You know, because I do question the depth. I think Latmane was a great pickup for them, and I really like how he plays D and can give you some production. Jason Cadiz settled into that backup point guard role nicely, and I think, you know, Nick Marshall, he's going to have his really good nights, but then he's going to have his nights where, you know, you don't see him so much, and then after that, there's really not much there. But you know, still that starting five is pretty lethal. They're pretty potent. And that win is, and now what do they face? I mean, it's, man, the Adelaide Entertainment Centre on Friday night is going to be pumping, absolutely pumping, considering who's coming to town and what it would mean to get a win against that team.
Adelaide, Sydney, it sells itself Friday night, doesn't it?
Yep.
It sells itself. What do you make of Melbourne United's weekend? The big win against Perth and then getting beaten on their home court against Cairns. How much does Sunday take away from the Perth win, if anything?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? One of the things about Cairns is they've been a real bogey side for Melbourne over the last few years. I think, what's the stat? They've won 6 of the last 7 against United. Losing on your home floor is never ideal, especially a home floor that's become a bit of a fortress for that group over the years. But they were playing a team that's on the rise. So I kind of don't look at it, you know, as a negative in some ways. I mean, obviously, yeah, it was disappointing they lost. And it did show, you know, that they've got the flaws that I've talked about with them, particularly up front, I think were kind of laid a little bit bare against a team that was actually smaller than them because Tanner Groves didn't play. That performance against Perth was frightening. And it was just such a beatdown, physically, psychologically, any way you want to frame it. They just took them behind the woodshed and smacked the living crap out of them. And again, I'm used to seeing Perth do that to other teams in that building, not have it happen to them. So that spoke volumes to me that it says that they're still in that championship window, you know, but they've got maybe a couple more warts than they've had in previous years, but it doesn't mean that they're not capable of winning a championship. To do that and go in there without Matty Dellavedova, who obviously I've got the highest regard for, and to just thoroughly dominate Perth on a night where the Wildcats should have had every reason to go in and think we're going to take care of business. They give up 60. They're down 64. What was it? 64-41 at the half. They, you know, and lose by 29. As I said, the biggest loss ever for a Wildcats team at ROC Arena. It's remarkable. And it's just down to how good Melbourne was right across the board, particularly defensively. Now, they struggled against the Taipans. I think they struggled with the Taipans' mobility. They struggled. Taron Armstrong just was not going to be bullied around by Shaili or Dellavedova. You know, Chris Golding was hot early and kind of cooled off late. But again, you're kind of looking, I've said this, I mean, Marcus Lee, yeah, look, 5 of 5 from the field, 11 points, had a couple of great alley-oop jams, which we know he's great off the pick and roll with that stuff. But still, it wasn't particularly impactful. And Rob Lowe had one of those games where you just look at him and say, well, where is he? You know, 2 points, 2 rebounds, just not good enough. And that's that. They've kind of got that center position. It's sort of, you know, stuck together with it's a bit of duct tape, and, you know, they're kind of trying to sort of work through it. But it is, I look at that front line of theirs and those two bigs, and, you know, they both can play, but I'm just not sure they can give the same sort. They're not ever going to replace it, Luala Chul. It's as simple as that. And that was one game. Even though, ironically, they probably had to play a bit more small ball because the Taipans, you know, even though they had a Calder Gack, who was brilliant, and there's your 7-footer, he was sensational, 14 points, 8 boards. But I'm not too concerned about the loss. I thought the game said more about how good the Taipans were rather than how poor Melbourne was. I don't think Melbourne was that poor in that game. I just felt they were outplayed, and you know, that can happen.
I thought the revival from Tasmania was quite something against Perth on Sunday after an abysmal start. 23-9 at quarter time, you think game over, but they gritted it out as they so often do, the Jet Jumpers. And they needed that too.
No doubt. They really did. And as you said, you know, particularly after you know, going down in their previous game, they had to have that one. You know, losing, and again, you know, you lose to a Cairns team that we've said, you know, are on the rise. But I think the issue for Tasmania has never been their heart, their commitment, or anything else. I think right now the issue is offensively, and that's where they are struggling offensively to get anything going. Now, they as you know, Scott Roth said, they're kind of trying to grind their way through it at the moment, and they're just lucky that they've got this foundation. Which, by the way, you know, if you remember years and years ago when they first came into the league, the first thing that Scott Roth did was ignore the offensive system. Because it was all he wanted to build the foundation defensively, and it's an off-use term that, you know, teams want to be really good defensively, etc. But you know, he lived it, and it worked because they made the grand final in their debut season, and of course, you know, we know what happened after that. But so they can always rely on that because that's the foundation of the team's culture, the foundation of the team's system is what they do defensively. Is it going to be enough this year? When you're up against teams with so much offensive potency across the board, that's to be seen. But you know, you can never write them off. Even it's really funny. I thought Perth was outstanding for the most part in that game. I really did. They did everything they could in again an incredibly hostile environment, but they shut them down to the point where, you know, I felt like, are they actually going to get away with this? I never felt that concerned about Tasmania because I always knew they'd make a run, and I always knew they were going to string some stops together because that's what they do. And then once they feed on that crowd and some, you know, shots start falling and, you know, they start rolling, they're almost impossible to beat down there. So, yeah, it was a fantastic performance because Perth gave it everything. You know, I mentioned before, as much as I think Perth have got problems, I think you could not fault the effort or the commitment or the desire or the want. They just got undone in the end by a team that was really desperate to get that W on their home floor in front of that amazing fan base. And it always strikes me, it's quite funny, Milton Doyle. You know, you kind of look at him. For three quarters, it was kind of like, send this dude home. He's terrible. And then, of course, what happens? He just hits one big shot after the other. And the clutchest of shots, and he always does. It's just one of those things with him. You look up and he's got 5 points. He's shooting 2 for 10, and you're thinking, this guy is what is going on here? But then you always know what's going to happen in the fourth quarter when they need him. When they need him, he delivers. You know, he's just a superb player. He really is. I'm still not sold about Craig Sword. He did some really nice things for them, but again, he fouled out. His defense was exceptional, and that's his pedigree. I'm just not sure that he's going to bring enough offense, enough scoring for them that they might need. But look, again, it maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe they're going to do it their way. Yeah, they're going to grind it out. If they get you in a half court type ball game, a slowdown game, then they're going to pound the hell out of you, and that's what they did. You know, that's the game they played, and they got away with it because they just bend teams to their will, I think is the best way to describe it.
Let's look at round four now. Let's get to the picks for another big weekend ahead. Thursday night, Cairns Convention Centre, the Taipans against the Wildcats.
Well, we've sort of, you know, talked about this, haven't we? And it's desperation for Perth. It really is. And, you know, they're on a bit of a huge trail, as they do. It's amazing because I think they go from here to, what is it? They're playing New Zealand, I think, in Auckland on Saturday. So, you know, Thursday in Cairns, and then it's a massive trip over to New Zealand.
That's next Saturday they play there.
Yeah, next Saturday. That's right. So that's kind of what I'm saying. So only the one game for Perth this weekend, and this is this round, and this is it. So they have to put everything into this because then you got New Zealand. Then who have they got after that? Then they got Sydney at home again.
They'll be loving that.
Yeah,
and then Illawarra go over there.
Yeah, so there's. Yeah, like the next two games, you kind of look at it and think, you know, even New Zealand will be coming off their NBA sojourn, obviously.
And they play in Brisbane on the Thursday as well. So,
well, yeah, there you go. So they're coming off that and another NBL game in between. So, wow. Look, yeah, as I said, I think 40's biggest challenge is going to be keeping these guys' minds on the job, you know, and I think he knows that. And I think keeping them very level-headed, that understanding that look, all of a sudden people are talking about us, we're the darlings of the league, we've beaten both grand finalists back-to-back, everybody loves us now, but you cannot get ahead of yourselves. And they've got a team that's going to be, look, if they bring the same kind of effort they did in Hobart, they're going to be really hard to beat. But I still can't go past Cairns.
Yeah.
You know, particularly if Tanner Groves is right, I think he probably will be. I think Armstrong is a rising superstar, and Rob Edwards to me is an MVP candidate right off the bat, and I really like what Sam Wardenberg's doing as well, and all the rest of the guys kind of playing their roles. So it'll be close, but I just can't go past the Taipans at the moment.
Cairns to win, and John really to continue to be the scourge of the Red Army, unfortunately. Just
aren't they giving it to JR? My goodness.
Just quietly, who's under the most pressure right now? John Riley, Mike Kelly, or Justin Schuler?
Oh, it's not Johnny. I mean, he signed that 3-year deal, so I don't think it's that much pressure. Well, yeah, there's always pressure in
Perth. Well, if you've got the Red Army coming after you, I would consider that pressure of a different kind.
Nah, it's Mike Kelly. It has to be for me.
Although, I guess when it comes to who's going to get the most fan vitriol, I'd say that's definitely
JR, really. But that's the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
No two ways about it. I'm just saying in terms of what from a job security standpoint, I don't think it's a contest. I think from what I've heard, I think it's Mike Kelly by the length of the straight. I know I hate to say that, as I've said before.
Adelaide, Sydney on Friday night. I'm wondering, is this the game of the weekend? It may very well be.
I was thinking about that. I think Well, let's be honest. I think there's a couple of games. There's probably three or four games that you can talk about simply because of the way teams are playing right now. I mean, this one could definitely qualify. Adelaide Entertainment Centre will be a stone-cold sellout. They will be hanging from the rafters. They will boo Brian Goorjian unmercifully because that's what they do in Adelaide. That's what they've always done. And I think they've been waiting and waiting for this. He's going to cop it. The Kings are going to cop it big time. Adelaide, you know, Dejan Vasiljevic, he always wants to prove a point against his old club. Isaac Humphries, another ex-Sydney King, won Rookie of the Year with the Kings, even though that was obviously, you know, a fair way down the track. But, oh, man, this is tough. You know, Montrezl Harrell, that front line's got the potential to do some serious damage. But the flip side is, you know, Kelly Le Pepe was awesome against Brisbane. Yeah, the beast, as he wants to be known as. Then you've got Cam Oliver, who still isn't 100% fit, in my opinion, but he will get there. And we know how devastating he can be from the perimeter as well as inside. It's a fascinating, fascinating matchup. Jalen Adams going up against Kenrick Davis, worth the price of admission on its own. It's going to be a hell of a game. Again, can't see it being anything other than close. I don't see a blowout either way. Oh, I'll give it to the Kings, but only barely.
I'm still not sold on Adelaide being able to perform on the big nights. And this is a big night at home against the championship favourite. And they would still have to be considered that, the Sydney Kings. I'm just historically, in the last few years, especially in the post-Jerry Wright era, these nights have not ended well for Adelaide more often than not. So with that in mind, I'm leaning to Sydney just because I've got more faith in a Brian Goorjian stacked Sydney roster in a game like this. But if Adelaide win it, then that will go a long way to settling some nerves as far as, can you trust Adelaide in a big game? Well, here's an early opportunity to do that, because that is going to be a madhouse on Friday night at the Adelaide Entertainment Centre. And they've had a really good week on and off the court, the 36ers. I give them full credit. They've made peace with Scott Ninnis. Hopefully that will open the door to bringing Brett Maher back into the fold. The Adelaide public certainly showed out for them last week, so that dispels any fears that maybe the Adelaide public are off the 36ers after everything that happened in the off-season. And winning's certainly going to help that. So if they can do that against Sydney on Friday night, then you can start penciling in some more sellouts for the 36ers going forward. Saturday, Hawks, Jack Jumpers, Wynn Entertainment Centre.
Another game that could be game of the week status as well. Two teams that, you know, you could easily see fight out the grand final. And this is how far we've come. You know, it's not the powerhouses anymore that, you know, I mean, Tasmania pretty much changed everything. So winning the championship last year. Illawarra can't afford the kind of silly turnovers, the kind of mistakes that they made early in that game against Adelaide last week. I think, you know, they have to get off to a good start against a Tasmania team that will just keep coming all night and knows how to, you know, play the kind of defense that can be incredibly disruptive. They're physical, they're tough, they'll rebound. Illawarra's got to be on their game. They've got to be basically the team that beat the Sydney Kings if they're going to get away with the W here. This is a really tough one. I mean, I've still got enormous time for Illawarra, but Tasmania, their offensive struggles aside, to me, it's going to come down to who controls the tempo. If Illawarra gets this into a track meet and Tasmania, you know, can't slow them down, I think the Hawks will get this pretty comfortably. But Tasmania, as I said, has a way of making you play their style and dragging you deep into the mud, and which they know they have to because they're not the same offensively as they were last year, particularly with obviously Jack McVeigh gone. But, you know, Craig Sword isn't going to be a guy that's going to give you 20 a game. He's just, that's not his game. So they have to figure out different ways to win. That's going to be, you know, the likes of Majuk Deng. That's going to be the likes of Anthony Drimmick, the likes of Jordan Crawford, obviously stepping up. And they're going to have some problems dealing with Trey Kell, Tasmania. He's another one that's an MVP candidate early on in this season. I'm going to go for a bit of an upset. I have a sneaking suspicion Tasmania gets this. It is a coin flip because I respect Illawarra enormously, and I know that Justin Tatum will have them ready to go, as he always does. And there'll be a big crowd down there again, and the atmosphere will be terrific. But Tasmania just has this unerring ability to find a way, and I think they do in that ball game on Saturday night.
See, I feel Illawarra is going to win this, and I think they'll probably put it away quite early and then play keepings off essentially with the lead. I can see them putting on a 38-point opening quarter and just putting this game to bed early and pushing that pace. And it's no slight on the Jack Jumpers, but on the back of last week, the Hawks just missing out against the 36ers, I think they'll be primed for a big performance with the week turnaround. So I'm going the Hawks on this one, and I think they'll win this one well. Phoenix Bullets. This could be a quadruple overtime. This could be a one-way thumping. All I know is whoever loses is going to be in a don't come Monday scenario.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's again, it's a matchup of teams where they've got the two coaches are probably under the most pressure right now. Justin Schüller for Brisbane and Mike Kelly for Southeast Melbourne, as we've spoken about. Yeah, I won't spend too much time in this. I think the Phoenix gets this, and I think they get it easily. I think they, for at least one night, showcase their potential. I think a few guys. I think it is a bit of a get right game. Maybe not so much in one respect, because I think Brisbane are just. I just don't think they're good enough, and I don't think they're talented enough. Look, I again, Justin Schüller's another guy who I like a lot. And I think he's very, very good talent developer. Is he going to be an effective head coach in this league? Time will tell. I don't think he's proven that yet. Hey, if Brisbane get the W, I honestly think that'll be it for Mike Kelly. I just think he has to win this, and I do think he'll get them up, and I think they'll win this game. I just think they've got too much talent at the end of the day.
I would expect the Phoenix to win, but at the same time, I wouldn't be entirely shocked if the Bullets win by 20. It's just that kind of scenario at the moment. And if the Bullets do win by 20, the Phoenix need to make changes Sunday morning.
That's what I said. I just think, you can't with the talent on this team and what they've done to build this roster. If they start 0-5, that's got to be. You can never say never, right? But it's a point in the season where they could make that change. And look, people might say, well, who are you going to get to coach? Well, I mean, there's an ex-Phoenix coach right there. And look, I've got no knowledge of this at all. There's two ex-NBL. I mean, you want to talk about, I mean, Sammy Mack's on the bench, Sam McKinnon. So he's on the bench right now. So they could, get him to step in. But then you've got the obvious candidate in Simon Mitchell. Now, I don't know if Simon even wants to coach again, or at least right now. I think he's pretty happy doing what he's doing. But, I think if push comes to shove, I mean, if Tommy Greer came to him, Romy Chowdhury, and said, look, mate, we need to make a change, and you know this team, and you're a respected guy, highly respected guy. We think you can make something out of this season. It'd be, knowing Simon, it'd be hard to say no, I would imagine. But I'm sure he doesn't want to do that. And I really want to hasten to add, I'm not putting any words in anyone's mouth or anything like that. I'm just saying that if they start 0-5, they've got to be looking for a change there. I don't see how you could survive.
Because it's not just 0-5 in a vacuum. It's also coming off the back of a 10-18 record last year.
Yeah, exactly. Which there were excuses for, that horrific injury toll and all of that. But as I said, Mike's record as an NBL coach ain't great. It just isn't.
No, what is it that they've won one in their last 16, I think it was.
Yeah.
I saw the other day.
Yeah.
There
Just not, yeah.
It's Phoenix bad. We've gone over that quite a bit. I don't want to drive the knife too far into Phoenix fans because they're suffering enough at the moment. So is the club. It was 1-13 1-13 in their last 14. Southeast Melbourne. It ain't good. Kings Taipans on Sunday, 2:30 Kudos Bank Arena. Jeez, this is gonna be fun.
Yeah. Yet another game of the week possibility. Look, the Kings, the last time they're at Qdos, they went down to Illawarra. They were diabolical from 3-point range, and I don't foresee that happening again, even on the second game of a back to back. It's not, not the travel. The travel's not too bad this time. They'll be back in Sydney from the Adelaide trip at a reasonable time on Saturday. They should have enough time to prepare for a Cairns team that'll have had, an extra day to recover after their game against Perth at home. But they face, a longer trip to Sydney than the Kings do. So from Adelaide. So yeah, from that perspective, you're not going to be able to use travel as an excuse this time if you're a Kings fan or any part of the organisation. Not that they did. But this is fascinating. I mean, Sydney fans get their first look up close at Taron Armstrong and his incredible potential as a ball player, not only for the NBL, but how far he could go internationally, potentially playing for the Boomers. And even, I mean, who knows how far this kid goes? That's how good he is. Rob Edwards, I mean, that's going to be, he's going to be fun to watch. Sam Wardenberg coming into that building. He's going to have his hands full with Xavier Cooks. Cooks has been absolutely magnificent this year. And he's probably the favourite for MVP right now. Yeah, I mean, I think that for me, I think him, I kind of look at him. I look at Trey Kell. I look at Rob Edwards. So I think two of them, are going to be up against each other in this ball game. But Cooks has been brilliant. And, Kelly LePepe is just going to get better and better. The Jalen Galloway is another one who's starting to find his feet. And I love the fact that, Brian Goorjian gave Tyler Robertson some burn against Brisbane. And although he's not the typical kind of, athletic, above the rim type of player, he's very cerebral. He can shoot the hell out of it from extreme range and just makes the right plays. And I think, the Kings have got probably one big question mark about them, and that's the backup point guard position. I think you're going to see some changes. It'd be nice to see Isaiah Liafa hit a three. I think he's 0 of 14 for the season, 1 of 17 overall. So he's it's in I think it's in his head. But by the same token, if you're focusing on that, you're kind of missing what else he's doing, which is being a good facilitator and especially being an outstanding defender, which really is his bread and butter. So I tend to think that the Kings are going to make some changes. I think from a rotational standpoint, I think you're going to see more of Liafa and more of Robertson than perhaps you're going to see of Sean Bruce moving forward. And nothing against Sean, but I think those two guys, I think we've seen offer a bit more. I think Jalen Galloway and Alex Toohey as a combo at that kind of 2-3-4 spot are a scary proposition. And we all know about Bol Kwol and how well he plays defense, although some would say he kind of skirts the edge of the rule book in terms of what he does physically to opposing guys. But it's a tough one to call in some respects, but I still think the Kings at home, really hard to go past them against a Cairns team that's going to pose quite a few questions to them.
This is where I've got my upset alert on for the week, because the Cairns Taipans, another place where they have gone into and they've broken some hoodoos in Qdos Bank Arena in recent years.
Yep.
I think they get it done on Sunday. And it's no slight on the Kings, but I think they get it done on Sunday.
Yeah, it's a big call.
But I'm prepared to go with the Taipans in this one. I still think Kings will finish above the Taipans when all is said and done, but I think the Taipans will go 2-0 on the weekend.
Yeah, if that happens, man, we talked about it. I mean, it's the lid's going to come off. I mean, as early as the season is, if they manage to pull that off, if they manage to get those two wins on the back of what they did in round three, oh my goodness, look out.
Melbourne and Adelaide finish off the weekend, 4:30 on Sunday afternoon. It's always a big rivalry between United and the 36ers. It stretches back to the Tiger days. But this is one that United really need to pick up, because this is not a team that's accustomed to losing two on the trot on their home floor, and I think they'll be primed and ready for a big one here. The 36ers have got a huge night on Friday night against the Kings. I think that might play into it a bit as well. but I'm expecting United to come out breathing blue flames on Sunday afternoon, and I think they get this done.
Yeah, it's a huge test for Adelaide in one respect, because as great as they were over the weekend, they're not going to see the type of pressure 90 feet up the floor that Melbourne are going to bring to bear. And that's Shaley, that's Matthew Dellavedova, that's Jack White, then the rim protection of Marcus Lee, and everybody else that steps onto that floor. I do agree with you. I think that's going to be the challenge, Adelaide. They're going to face a very, very physical outfit that will be in kind of that mode they were against the Perth Wildcats at REC Arena. So Adelaide's not without a chance, mind you. I don't see this as a blowout by any stretch, but I do think, and I realise that, after Adelaide, I've been highly impressed with them, and I've given them quite a few bouquets in this podcast, and I realise I'm saying that I think they're going to lose both games. That sounds a bit counterintuitive, but I just think Melbourne at home, John Cain Arena, we don't lose games too many times there. We don't like losing two in a row. Again, it'll be a sellout crowd. They're going to bring extreme physicality to the contest. And even though I think, that they do still have their struggles offensively, I think an Adelaide can put some scoreboard heat on. Ultimately, I think United's pressure and physicality will just be too much.
Next week on the program, I want to get your... because we had this on the run sheet tonight, but we've run out of time because otherwise this is going to become a three-hour epic. Early MVP leaderboard, because you don't have Bryce Cotton in there at the moment in your top five. It's something we'll dig deeper into next week, but you don't have Bryce Cotton there.
No. And I can make an argument for it as well. So, but we'll leave that to next week.
Absolutely. And, of course, the Breakers, not a part of the weekend's action. They're over in the States playing some NBA preseason games. I have to be honest, I've never seen it. It could also just be because it's the New Zealand Breakers, but I've never heard less about it than I have at the moment with the NBA games.
They played well against Utah too. They were tired after one. And again, as has happened in the course of many of these games, just got overwhelmed in the end by superior talent. It's just how it is, but they certainly didn't disgrace themselves, which that will be heartening for the league. Yeah, look, I don't know, people are into the concept as much as they used to be. Now maybe it's just because it's New Zealand, the NBL season's already started, therefore we're kind of more focused on what's happening domestically than we are excited about an NBL team going over and going up against, they play Philadelphia tomorrow. But I'm kind of got mixed feelings. Look, about the concept. Look, it was a fantastic concept and a fantastic idea, and it may still have some value if only sort of to keep that relationship going and keep the NBL front of mind from an NBA perspective. Because it's not like they're playing, in any old league. They chose us, which is fantastic. And we certainly, for the most part, haven't embarrassed ourselves. But I'm just wondering, based off, are people, did they watch? Did they, are they excited about them playing the 76ers tomorrow? I don't, and tomorrow being Tuesday, we're recording this on a Monday. But, yeah, it's interesting. I'm kind of mixed about it now. I'm not so sure, but anyway.
The ideal idea to freshen it up would be to get an NBA team to the East Shores, but that is a whole different beast entirely, of course.
Yeah, that's going to be too tough. I mean, when I say too tough, I mean you certainly could get them here preseason. I think, it'd take some doing, but they got their United States team down and played those two games at Marvel Stadium. But, I think that's probably got to be the next iteration. If you're going to continue with it, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's people smarter than me that will say, these are the reasons why it still matters. But from what I can see at the moment, there hasn't just been Maybe it's just this year. Maybe it's just the fact that it's New Zealand. Maybe it's the fact that it is in season, so we're kind of more focused on that than we are of those guys overseas. But yeah, in the NBA, and maybe that's the only reason that it is not an Australian team that's playing over there at the moment.
I think you've got to either send one of the big market teams next year, and I'm talking about either the Wildcats, the Kings, or United, or go a different road. Send the Hawks, send the Taipans, send the Jackies.
Again, I'm sure there's smarter people than me that will tell me, McQuaid, you're crazy. We should stick with the concept as long as we can. And maybe they're right. I don't know. I'm just a bit mixed about how I feel about about the NBL XNBA games as a concept right now.
I think it's a
Just
book.
doesn't seem to have the same excitement level this year than in previous years.
No, it's a look. It's worth doing if for nothing else to keep the relationship alive. And I'm not entirely convinced that it wouldn't be as strong even if you didn't have those games. But it is a concept that is dating now, and there's only so many times what we can see these events without thinking, okay, well, what else is there? Barring bringing a team out here, I think. You look at who you're sending over there next year. And again, I said it last week, the Breakers, when they come back, is that going to hurt their season? Because they started 2-0. Is that going to hurt them? So then you have a tougher task trying to convince these sides to go over there and start their season with these trips. But anyway, that's a discussion I'm sure we'll have next week when we see how the Breakers return from the States. 116-87, by the way, the Jazz beat the Breakers in the first game. They play the 76ers on Tuesday. That's it for this week's roundtable. We'll be back again next week with another jam-packed episode. Of course, if you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcasts, Apple, Spotify, all the others. There are some that I can't pronounce, but there's about 7 million different podcast platforms these days, and we're on about 6.5 million of those. We'll be back next week with another edition of the roundtable. Until then, enjoy your hoops.